Martha, thanks for reaching out. We understand you've been having some trouble with your ears and experiencing dizziness.
Yeah.
And your doctor mentioned otosclerosis as a possibility. So this deep dive is really for you. We've pulled together some, reliable sources to really try and understand this condition better.
Exactly. It's a good chance to explore otosclerosis properly. Basically, it involves abnormal bone growth inside the middle ear, and this growth can stop those tiny, tiny bones from moving like they should, especially the stapes. It's one of the smallest bones in the whole body. And when those bones can't vibrate freely, well, that can cause hearing loss. And like you mentioned, Martha, sometimes it affects balance too, leading to that dizziness.
Abnormal bone growth. Let's dig into how that actually messes with our hearing. Maybe we should quickly run through how hearing normally works.
Good idea. So think of it like this. Sound waves enter your ear, right? And they make your eardrum vibrate. And those vibrations get passed along this little chain of three bones in the middle ear, the malleus and sheakis and stapes.
Right, the hammer, anvil, and stirrup. I remember those names.
Those are the ones named for their shapes, pretty much.
So these tiny bones, they act like amplifiers.
Exactly. They boost those vibrations from the eardrum and send them deeper towards the inner ear. And the main target there is the cochlea. It's this spiral-shaped thing filled with fluid. Inside the cochlea, you've got thousands of tiny hair cells, very specialized. When those boosted vibrations reach the cochlea, they make the fluid ripple. And that movement makes the little hair cells bend.
And that bending is the key bit, isn't it? That's where it turns into something the brain understands.
You got it. When the hair cells bend, they convert that physical movement, that vibration, into electrical signals. Those signals then shoot along the auditory nerve straight to your brain, and your brain interprets those signals as sound. It's really quite amazing when you think about it.
It really is. All from just sound waves in the air. Okay, so back to otosclerosis. You said it often involves the stapes, that tiny bone.
Yeah, the stapes, it's tiny, like maybe 3 by 2.5 millimeters, but it's crucial.
So what happens to it with this condition?
Well, this abnormal bone growth usually starts off as kind of soft and spongy. Sometimes they call this stage otospongiosis.
Spongiosis.
The spongy bone starts growing around the base of the stapes, sometimes the other middle ear bones too. But then over time, it hardens.
So it goes from spongy to hard.
Right. And that hardening, that sclerosis, which actually just means abnormal hardening, is what stops the stapes from vibrating properly.
So it's like it gets cemented in place almost. It can't do its job of passing the vibration along.
That's a really good way to put it. Yeah, it physically restricts the movement. And because the stapes can't vibrate efficiently, it doesn't transmit the sound energy properly to the inner ear, to the cochlea. And that leads to what's called conductive hearing loss. The sound just isn't being conducted effectively through that middle part of the ear.
Okay, that makes sense for the hearing loss part. But you mentioned Martha's dizziness. How does otosclerosis cause balance issues?
Well, that's where it gets a bit more complex. Sometimes this abnormal bone growth doesn't just stay in the middle ear. It can actually spread or grow into the inner ear. Now, the inner ear has the cochlea for hearing, but it also has the vestibular system.
Which controls balance.
Exactly. So if that bony growth starts messing with the structures of the vestibular system, it can disrupt how they work.
I see.
And that disruption can lead straight to those feelings of dizziness or vertigo or just general unsteadiness that you've been feeling, Martha.
Okay, so it's the bone growth affecting the stapes for hearing and potentially spreading to the inner ear's balance system, causing dizziness.
Got it. Now, Martha mentioned specific symptoms. How well do those line up with what the research says about otosclerosis?
They line up very well, actually. The sources consistently point to a few key things. Probably the most common sign is hearing loss that comes on gradually and gets progressively worse.
Slowly over time. Yes, usually. And often it starts in just one ear first. Then later on, it tends to affect the second ear too, though it's pretty common for one ear to end up being worse than the other.
And you mentioned she had trouble with certain sounds.
That's right. Difficulty hearing lower pitched sounds, like deep voices, or even whispers, that's often one of the first things people notice. Tinnitus is also really common. That's the ringing or maybe a roaring, buzzing, or hissing sound in the ears when there's no external noise.
Right, the ringing and obviously the dizziness we just talked about if the inner ear is involved. Anything else distinctive?
There are a couple of slightly stranger symptoms that are worth noting. One's called parakousis willisii.
Paracousis willisii. What's that?
It's kind of a paradox. Someone with this type of conductive hearing loss might actually find they hear better when they're in a noisy place.
Better in noise. That seems backwards.
It does, but the idea is that in loud environments, people tend to talk louder, maybe at a slightly higher pitch too.
Huh?
And that louder, higher sound might just bypass the blockage a bit more easily or overcome the hearing loss threshold.
Huh. That's really fascinating. So a noisy cafe might actually be easier for conversation than a quiet room for some people.
Could be, yeah. Another thing is that some people with otosclerosis find themselves starting to speak more quietly.
Why would that happen?
Because their own voice might sound unusually loud inside their own head. The bone conduction pathway sound traveling through their skull might be relatively enhanced compared to the air conduction pathway that's being blocked.
Wow. Okay. So gradual hearing loss, trouble with low sounds, maybe tinnitus, maybe dizziness, possibly hearing better in noise and speaking softer yourself. That's quite a collection of clues.
It is.
Now, Martha's probably asking, like, why? Why does this happen? What are the risk factors here?
That's the million-dollar question, really. The exact cause isn't pinned down, but we know several factors definitely increase the risk. Genetics is a big one.
Runs in families.
Very much so. There's a strong hereditary link. If one of your parents has it, Martha, your risk is roughly 25%.
All right.
If both parents have it, that jumps to around 50%. And this is important. Not everyone with the genes or the family history actually develops it.
So it's not guaranteed even with the family link?
Not at all. Researchers have found links to specific areas on different chromosomes, but it's clearly not just one single gene causing it. It's more complex.
Okay. What else besides genetics?
Gender seems to play a role. Women are about twice as likely to develop otosclerosis as men.
Twice as likely. Why?
Well, the suspicion is hormones are involved. In fact, pregnancy seems to be a potential trigger or accelerator for some women.
Oh, really?
Yeah, some women first notice symptoms during or after pregnancy. And some studies suggest hearing loss might get worse with each pregnancy if a woman has otosclerosis.
Wow, those hormonal shifts seem really significant then.
They might be, yes. Age is another factor. It typically starts showing up between, say, age 10 and 45.
So relatively young.
Often, yeah. Most commonly, it starts in someone's 20s, and the symptoms often become most noticeable in their 30s.
Okay, young to middle adulthood, mainly. Does ethnicity matter?
It seems to. Otosclerosis is definitely more common in people of Caucasian background. Maybe around 1 in 10 white adults have some form of it. It's also more common in people with Indian ancestry.
And less common elsewhere.
Yes, much less common in people of African, Native American, and most other Asian populations. The reasons for these differences aren't fully clear, but it points back towards that genetic component.
Interesting. What about things in someone's medical past? Could infections or other conditions play a part?
There are a few contenders being investigated. One is the measles virus.
Measles? How?
Well, they've actually found measles virus RNA, like genetic fragments in the stapes footplates of some people with otosclerosis.
No way.
Yeah. And adding to that, populations that have widespread measles vaccination tend to have lower rates of otosclerosis. So there's a suggested link, maybe a past infection triggers something later.
That's unexpected. Anything else?
Yes. People with a condition called osteogenesis imperfecta, that's a genetic disorder causing brittle bones, they have a higher risk too.
Okay, brittle bone disease, that makes some sense.
There's also been some maybe less conclusive research looking at fluoride levels in drinking water, suggesting maybe non-fluoridated water is a risk factor, but that's still debated.
Mm.
Also, things like stress fractures, tiny injuries to the ear bones or the tissue around them have been considered. And autoimmune responses are another area of research, the idea that the body's immune system might mistakenly attack the ear tissues.
So the body attacking itself.
Potentially, yeah.
Yeah.
And finally, some reports, more anecdotal, suggest major life events like menopause, significant physical trauma, or even major surgery might sometimes trigger or worsen otosclerosis in people who are already susceptible.
Gosh, it really sounds like a combination of things. Your genes, maybe hormones, age, ethnicity, possibly viruses, other health conditions. A lot of potential factors.
It does seem to be multifactorial, yes.
So if Martha thinks, okay, these symptoms, these risk factors, they sound familiar. What's the path to actually getting a diagnosis?
Right. The first step usually is seeing your GP, your primary care doctor. They can listen to your concerns and then refer you to the right specialists.
Which would be?
Typically, an ENT doctor that's ear, nose, and throat, or otolaryngologist, or maybe even an otologist who focuses just on ears. and definitely an audiologist who specializes in testing hearing.
Okay, ENT and audiologists, what do they do?
They'll start by taking a really thorough history, Martha, asking about your symptoms, when they started, how they've changed, and crucially, about any family history of hearing loss.
Makes sense.
Then the ENT will do a physical exam, looking inside your ears with an otoscope, that little light thing to check the ear canal and eardrum.
Okay.
After that, the audiologist steps in for the hearing tests. This is really key. They'll do a full audiogram.
What does that show exactly?
It maps out your hearing ability across different pitches or frequencies. It shows the type of hearing loss, like conductive, which is common in otosclerosis, or maybe sensorineural if the inner ear is involved, or even mixed. Mm-hmm. And sometimes with otosclerosis, there's a specific pattern on the audiogram, a little dip in bone conduction hearing right around the 2000 hertz frequency. It's called the Carhartt notch.
A Carhartt
notch. Yeah, it's a classic sign that audiologists look for, though not everyone with otosclerosis has it. It helps point towards that stapes fixation.
So the hearing test gives a lot of information. Are there other tests they might use?
Oh, definitely. Tympanometry is another common one. It measures how well your eardrum moves and the pressure in your middle ear.
What would that show in otosclerosis?
It might show that the eardrum isn't moving as freely as it should, suggesting stiffness in that middle ear system, you know, because the stapes is stuck.
Okay.
They might also use tuning forks, simple tests called the Weber and Rinn tests, which can also help figure out if the hearing loss is conductive or sensorineural.
Tuning forks. Okay. Anything more advanced?
Sometimes, yeah. Especially if the picture isn't totally clear, or to see exactly how much bone growth there is, they might order a CT scan. A high-resolution CT scan of the temporal bones.
The bones that hold the ear structures.
Exactly. That scan can actually visualize the abnormal bone, often around the oval window where the stape sits. It also helps rule out other things that could cause similar symptoms.
Like what?
Oh, like chronic ear infections, maybe Meniere's disease, which also causes dizziness and hearing issues, or other rare bone conditions. There's even a grading system based on CT findings for otosclerosis severity.
Wow. So it's a pretty thorough process. History, exam, detailed hearing tests, and the imaging, all to pinpoint otosclerosis and rule out other possibilities.
Precisely. Getting the right diagnosis is crucial for figuring out the next steps.
Okay, so let's say the diagnosis is confirmed. It is otosclerosis. What are the treatment options available for Martha?
Well, there's a range of approaches, depending mainly on how severe the hearing loss is and how much it's impacting her life. For very mild hearing loss, sometimes the approach is just monitoring.
Just watching it.
Yeah, basically watch and wait. Regular hearing tests to see if it's changing or getting worse. No active treatment yet.
But what if it is getting worse or it's already bothersome?
Then hearing aids are a very, very common option. They don't fix the underlying problem, the bone growth.
Right.
But they amplify sound to overcome the hearing loss. Modern aids are really sophisticated and can be programmed specifically for the pattern of loss caused by otosclerosis. They can make a huge difference in communication.
So hearing aids help manage the symptom, the hearing loss itself. Are there any medications that can actually slow down the otosclerosis?
That's an area of ongoing research and some debate. Sodium fluoride supplements have been used.
Fluoride, like a toothpaste.
Sort of, yeah. The idea is it might help stabilize or harden the bone lesions in the otospongiosis phase, maybe slowing progression. Calcium and vitamin D are sometimes recommended alongside it.
Does it work?
The evidence is, well, it's not definitively proven effective for everyone. It's still being studied. Same goes for another class of drugs called bisphosphonates, which are used for osteoporosis. Mm. They're also being looked at for otosclerosis. But right now, there's no standard guaranteed medication to stop or cure it.
Okay, so meds are still kind of experimental or uncertain. What about surgery? Is that an option?
Yes, surgery is often the most effective treatment, especially for significant conductive hearing loss from otosclerosis. The main procedure is called a stapedectomy, or a variation called stapedotomy.
Stapedectomy, what does that involve?
It's incredibly delicate microsurgery. The surgeon removes either part or all of that fixed stapes bone.
The one that's stuck.
Exactly. And they replace it with a tiny artificial prosthesis, like a tiny piston.
A prosthetic stape.
Essentially, yes. This little device bridges the gap, connecting the incus bone to the inner ear's oval window, restoring that pathway for sound vibrations to get through.
Wow. And the stapedotomy.
That's a slightly less invasive technique, where instead of removing the whole stapes footplate, they make a tiny hole in it and insert the prosthesis through that hole.
That sounds incredibly precise. How successful is this surgery?
It's generally very successful for conductive hearing loss. The success rates are often quoted around 90%, meaning about 9 out of 10 people get a significant improvement in their hearing in that ear.
90% is really high.
It is. If both ears are affected, they'll typically operate on one ear first, let it heal, and then consider the second ear later.
Are there risks involved with the surgery that Martha should know about?
Yes. Like any surgery, there are potential risks, though serious complications are thankfully rare. There's a small chance the hearing could actually get worse or even be lost entirely in that ear, but that's very uncommon. More common, though usually temporary, are things like dizziness or vertigo right after surgery, maybe some tinnitus or changes in taste sensation, because a small taste nerve runs through the middle ear.
Taste changes. Interesting.
Yeah. Very rarely there could be injury to the facial nerve, which also runs nearby, or the prosthesis could move out of place later on. And good post-op care is vital, avoiding things like blowing your nose hard, flying, diving, heavy lifting for a while.
Right. Protecting the ear while it heals. What if the hearing loss is really severe, maybe involving the inner ear too? Is surgery still an option?
If the otosclerosis has significantly damaged the inner ear, the cochlea, leading to severe or profound sensor and neural hearing loss, then the STAPE surgery might not be enough or appropriate. In those cases, a cochlear implant might be considered.
Ah, the implant that bypasses the damaged part and directly stimulates the nerve.
Exactly. That's usually reserved for more severe hearing loss where hearing aids or STAPE surgery aren't providing sufficient benefit.
Okay, so there's a clear pathway. Monitoring, hearing aids, possibly surgery, which is often very effective, and maybe cochlear implants for severe cases.
Mm.
What advice do the sources give for someone just, you know, living with otosclerosis day to day?
Well, number one is definitely getting that accurate diagnosis from the specialist. Don't guess, get it checked out properly.
Right.
Once you know what you're dealing with, you can work with your doctors and audiologist on the best management plan for you. Beyond that, general healthy lifestyle things can help manage the stress that often comes with hearing changes or dizziness.
Like what?
You know, finding ways to reduce stress, getting regular exercise, eating well, good sleep, avoiding smoking, the usual stuff. But it can make a difference in how you cope overall.
Makes sense.
And it's important to remember that hearing aids or surgery can really significantly improve quality of life for most people. And while it can cause severe hearing loss, it's actually rare for otosclerosis to lead to complete total deafness.
That's definitely reassuring to hear. It sounds like while it's a challenging condition, there are very effective ways to manage it. What about the future? Is research making progress?
Oh, absolutely. Research is ongoing on several fronts. Scientists are still working hard to understand the exact mix of genetics, environmental factors, maybe those viral links we talked about.
Trying to find the root cause.
Exactly. And a huge goal is to develop effective medical therapies. Imagine a drug that could actually stop the bone growth or even reverse it. That's the ultimate aim for many researchers.
That would be amazing.
It would. And things like temporal bone donation, people donating their inner ear structures after they pass away, are incredibly valuable for this research. It lets scientists study the disease directly.
Right.
There's also work on things like new implantable devices, maybe ones that could deliver medication directly to the inner ear structures. Lots of active investigation happening.
That's great to know things are moving forward. So, Martha, hopefully this deep dive helps. It seems otosclerosis is, well, it's complicated.
It is.
But understanding how it works, that abnormal bone growth, messing with the STAPEs, maybe the inner ear too, and knowing the risk factors, how it's diagnosed, and the treatments out there, hopefully that feels empowering.
Yeah.
Key takeaways seem to be bone growth affects hearing, sometimes balance, genetics and other factors play a role. Doctors have good tools to diagnose it, and treatments from hearing aids to very successful surgery are available. And definitely follow up with your GP, get those referrals to an audiologist and an ENT specialist for a proper evaluation and advice that's specific to your situation.
Absolutely essential. And Martha, while hearing changes and dizziness can be really unsettling, remember that medical understanding and the treatments for conditions like otosclerosis are constantly improving. There's real hope for managing this effectively and maintaining a good quality of life. Maybe also check out resources like the American Hearing Research Foundation or the Hearing Loss Association of America. They often have great information and support.